Okay, good morning, welcome back. So welcome to everybody. We're starting the second part of our series called Getting to 613, which is trying to understand the background to getting to the 613 commandments and mitzvahs. This morning, I want to take great pleasure in thanking the Zerikas for sponsoring today's shiur. Le'ilui Nishmas, Michelle's aunt, Mrs. Bessie Schiffman Basia, Pastor of Yaakov HaKohen, which is Yortzeit, is by Bayom. Her memory should always be a blessing, and every time you mention her name, it should always be for good things. She should continue to get nachas from the entire Mishpacha. Also, the shir is sponsored anonymously for the Refuah Shlema Tinok Ben Chai Brocha Nechama, who was just in hospital over Shabbos and is in need of Rachmei Shamayim. We should continue to learn that he should have Refuah Shlema and enter Bevrisa Shal Avram Avinu Ba'itoy Uvizmanoi at a good and healthy hour. So let's jump straight into our learning today. Let's start at the very beginning. So we've talked about the idea that there are 613 mitzvahs. We've looked at some of the sources for that, and we saw that there was a fascinating discussion throughout history as to how we get to the 613 mitzvahs. But the truth be told is that if you were to take out your little clicker and you were to go through all of the Torah, and every time you saw the Torah telling you to do or not to do something, you were to click, you would get many more than 613 clicks. That's the way it is. There are more than 613 mitzvahs, which indicates that it must be that not every time there's a commandment or every time there's a negative commandment are we clicking. So that raises the very basic question as to what are the rules for what's in and what are the rules for what's out? Very basic question. And once we understand those rules, it'll help us understand also the frameworks of how mitzvahs work. And perhaps things which we took for granted, we kind of think, oh, there is a mitzvah. But there's many categories of mitzvahs, and there are many subcategories and sub-subcategories of mitzvahs. So it's worthwhile understanding how this works, and it's actually very fascinating. It informs the way that we go about our regular lives and understand what is demanded of us. So we're going to take a look at the beginning of a really fascinating sefer, which we didn't spend so much time on last time because it requires so much time itself. And this is the Rambam. The Rambam is the Mishneh Torah, but it's actually the beginning to his Mishneh Torah is called Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Book of Mitzvahs. Now, the Rambam actually isn't so long. It isn't an incredibly long sefer. The reason why it looks pretty thick is because everybody in the world has a commentary on it. So as an example, you know, at the beginning, the Rambam is only the center actually over here, and everybody else is around the sides as commentaries on the Rambam. So the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvos is not extensively long. But the Rambam does is a very fascinating thing. He says, in order to be able to count these mitzvos, we need to have rules as to say what's in and what's out, thereby synthesizing all of the actual Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebal Peh's treatment of it will now arrive at the rules for the 613 mitzvahs. So he lays down what he calls Shorashim. Shorash literally means a root, and he says there's going to be 14 of these Shorashim, which will explain which mitzvahs are in and which mitzvahs are out. He has 14 rules which he uses. It happens to be, by the way, that he has 14 volumes in his Sefer Mishneh Torah, which is where he puts all the halacha and its categories, but they're not specifically related to the 14 rules. So we're going to take a look at some of those rules to help unpack the subject. And just if you were the Rambam, let us just think this for a moment. What would be the highest on your agenda? How would these 14 rules be structured? What would be the first thing you would be writing? What would be the last thing you would be writing? So it's important to remember the context in which the Rambam is writing. Remember, at this point in time, there have been a number of people who have already written books counting the mitzvahs. As an example, one of the famous ones that the Rambam is responding to is the Sefer Halachos Gedolos. Halachos Gedolos was published a few centuries beforehand. We call it the Bahag, the Baal Halachos Gedolos, is the person, the author who wrote it. There's a little bit of a debate as to whether it was Rav Yehudai Gaon, whether it was another individual living around the same time. But be it as it may, in his introduction, this Sefer Halachos Gedolos, we saw that he introduces the 613 mitzvahs and he gives you a long list of all 613. He divides it based on punishment and category. That's how he divides it. Now, that being the case, the Rambam is actually responding to that and saying, what you counted there without explaining why was incorrect in many instances. And so if we look at these 14 principles that Rambam is about to lay down for us, it would make a lot of sense that the most important or the most vehement of the disagreements are going to come first. Make sense? Meaning when you're writing down a list of things, you probably put the things that are most important first. So the first few rules are going to be the ones that the Rambam feels clearly the most strongly about, and that's why there's an incredible amount of literature just on these rules. So we're going to take it step by step. I had thought maybe we'll do half this week and half next week, maybe six or seven this week and six or seven next week. But it turns out that the first two are so big and so meaty, there's so much to discuss. I think we're going to focus on the first two Shor HaShem of the Rambam today. And there's an incredible amount of literature on them. So let's jump straight in without much further ado. Here is the way I broke it down. And what I try to do is, as opposed to looking at all of the text inside, what I try to break it down into was a summary, where the Rambam gives us a synopsis of what he's trying to accomplish, some examples of the types of mitzvahs which are excluded, and then perhaps some debate or question on the Rambam. So here we go. The Rambam gives us his first rule, and the first rule which he says is most important in counting the mitzvahs is he is going to exclude any rabbinic mitzvahs. He's going to exclude any rabbinic mitzvahs. And his language is she'ein ro'i lemanois bichlal hazeh hamitzvahs she'hem midrabanon. We're not going to include rabbinic commandments. Now, think about this for a moment. Why is this a logical imperative, according to the Rambam? If we go back to the original source for the 613 mitzvahs, we had seen that the Gemara in Makos says a very simple thing. The Gemara says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha. Moses commanded us the Torah, and we know that the word Torah is the gematria of 611. 611 plus the two which Hashem told us at Har Sinai, and there you have 613. So actually, the language of that Gemara is that there were 611 commandments which Moshe and Moses commanded us from Sinai. So says the Rambam, it makes a whole lot of sense that all that's included are the mitzvahs which are commanded at Sinai. But as an example, so let's take examples. What about Chanukah or Purim? 100 brachos per day, or saying Hallel 18 days per year, those are commandments which the Torah never said. Moshe Rabbeinu never told us from Sinai, so it makes a whole lot of sense that they would be excluded from the count. Now, we may think this is obvious, but it's worthwhile noting that the Bahag, the Halachos Kedoshos, included Mikra Megillah and included Ner Chanukah as the 613 mitzvahs. The Rambam says, that's preposterous. That doesn't work. How could it be that those are included in the 613 mitzvahs which are from Sinai? This is what the Rambam says. Stands to reason. And the Rambam, in fact, very respectfully so, the way he does it is he says, Zulo seinu kosfu, those who are, those others wrote. So he refers to those other people he believes are misguided in when it comes to this. And he says these cannot possibly be included. Here's his summary of this rule. This is the summaries are usually towards the end of the Rambam. He says, "Aklal." The rule is, "Ki kol mashu midrabanan lo yimne bechlal atariag mitzvahs." Any rabbinic commandment is not included. Aklal hazeh who kolik Torah ki ein boy davar midrabanan kamoish nevair va'amnam. Nonetheless, he yosam moynim k'tzas advarim shem midrabanan va'oizim k'tzasam bechira mehem who inyan iyer shar lekabla b'shum ponim. The fact that the Halachos Gedolos will include some rabbinic mitzvahs, but not include others, is inconsistent. He says, and therefore, he is Amru Misha Amru. Hinei be'arnu inyan hazeh asharei shumayf sov, ad shalai nishar boi sofik klal el shumadam. There should be no doubt left. Now, that's a fascinating way to end, because there were many inkwells spilled on this Shoresh alone. So there's much sofek left after the Rambam has said this, but nonetheless, the Rambam feels that after going through this, with the greatest respect, we haven't gone through that whole show, we haven't seen all of that, but nonetheless, this is what the Rambam says. What I'd like to do is to just explore one avenue, one aspect of what the Rambam argues in this, and this is a very, very fascinating thing, and that is the real question isn't every rabbinic mitzvah a biblical mitzvah? Isn't every rabbinic mitzvah a biblical mitzvah? And let's think a moment for a rabbinic mitzvah in our lives. There are many, many, many rabbinic mitzvahs in our lives. Let's think of one, a simple one that we probably did this morning. The mitzvah of Netilas Yodayim, right? So we washed our hands. Now, that is not, the Torah does not tell us to wash our hands. There is a pasuk that the Gemara depends this on, what's called an asmachta. It depends this idea on a pasuk about Kedusha, but nonetheless, it is not actually a mitzvah from the Torah. So let's think about that for a moment. Here's the funny thing that Raman points out. Let's take a look at this, to the top of this page here. He says, why is it that the Bahag included the rabbinic mitzvahs? Meaning, on what grounds did he start this whole conversation? He says, that when we say, the next time you notice, any Birkas HaMitzvah, as opposed to a Birkas HaNehenen, meaning, if I'm eating food, that's what's called a Birkas HaNehenen. I'm enjoying something in this world. I'm enjoying food or smell. So I say a bracha before I eat. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Borei Min Emes Onos. Right? So that's what's called a Birkas HaNehenen. I'm enjoying something. But when I'm about to perform a mitzvah, and I do the bracha then. So in that case, that's a Birkas HaMitzvah. Listen to the Nusach HaBracha. It has an additional clause which says, Asher Ki Rishon B'Mitzvah Sovet Tzivanu. Blessed is God, the master of the world, who sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to do X, Y, and Z. So therefore, if it's the idea of Netilas Yodayim, Asher Ki Rishon B'Mitzvah Sovet Tzivanu, Al Netilas Yodayim. So it would seem, says the Rambam, that we're attributing the command to Hashem. Isn't that interesting? Ever thought about that? The next time you do a rabbinic commandment, you're saying that Hashem commanded you to do that. Well, where did he command you to do that precisely? So he says, well, that's the Gemara already asks this question. The Gemara says, well, where exactly did Hashem command us? The Gemara says, because it says, loitasur, you should not sway, you should not veer from what? What's the Gemara Torah talking about there? That's the end of the pasuk, which means don't swerve, don't disobey what the rabbis will tell you going right or left. Which means, what's the Torah saying? The Torah says, when those sages who are endowed with the capacity to make decrees and new mitzvahs midrabanon, don't disobey them, and that is a biblical commandment. So therefore, that's what the Gemara says. So therefore, says the Rambam, if that's the true, then this is a great support for the halachas gedolos. The Bahag would say, well, if I'm saying, Asher ki rishon b'mitzvah v'tzivanu, and what does it mean v'tzivanu that Hashem commanded me to wash my hands, when the Torah never explicitly says I should wash my hands? But the Torah does say I should listen to Chazal. And Chazal darshaned, Chazal explained that it's important to do Netilas Yodayim, it's important to do the mitzvah of Chanukah, or the Ner Chanukah, or Mikra Megillah. So in this case, because the Torah told me to listen to them, and they're telling me to do this, the license they were given by the Torah of Lo Sasur Mikol Asher Agidu L'Chai Amin U'Smol means to say that it essentially should be a biblical commandment. See the logic? Makes sense. That's based on this Gemara. That's what the Rambam asks. V'im mitam zeh, the Rambam says, if that's the reason, Manu Oysam, Hine Rou Shiimnu Kol Davar Shu Midrabanon. The Rambam does not disagree with this logic. He just says, if that's the truth, then every single rabbinic commandment should be included. Ki Kol Ma Shetzivanu Chachamim La'asoysay, V'Kol Ma Shizirunu Mimenu Kfar Tziva Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaSholom B'Sinai, Shu Tzivanu La'asoys. Surely all of it goes back to this command. V'amru al pi haTorah sheyarucha v'zirnu haKadosh Baruch Hu me'avor davar zeh ma'ase tiknu oisai oy gozru v'amru lo sasur. In fact, the Rambam says there's a positive commandment that you should listen to everything they teach you and don't veer from anything they teach you. So there's a positive and negative commandment attributed to listening to the Chachamim. So in every mitzvah should be included. Every rabbinic mitzvah should essentially be a biblical mitzvah. He says, "V'im yimoneh kol mashu derabbanan." If we're going to count everything which is in fact rabbinic, bichlal tariag mitzvahs, v'imnei shakol nichnas tachas amri yisparach loisah. So if it all falls into the category of listening to the sages, v'imnei ma manu bifrat elu v'loy manu zulasam. So why is it that in fact the Baal Halachas Gedolos only quotes as examples Purim and Chanukah, and does not include other things. Those are also mitzvahs midrabanan. Ki ena anachnu mevarchem asher kishon mitzvahs of tzivanu, kamoish mevarchem al mikra megillah, v'ner chanukah v'akol midrabanan. So the Rambam says it cannot be. The Baal Halachas Gedolah's logic cannot hold up to include every mitzvah midrabanan in the 613, or he would have included all of the mitzvahs midrabanan, then it would have been way more than 613 commandments. Now you'll notice something interesting over here. Does the Rambam disagree with the logic that every mitzvah midrabanan, every rabbinic commandment, has a biblical stamp to it, has a mitzvah midaraisa status to it? He does not. All he's disagreeing with is how you count them. Do you notice that? Meaning, the Rambam agrees to the premise of the Gemara in Shabbos that he quoted, that any time that I'm in fulfillment of doing Netilas Yodayim, I'm essentially doing the mitzvah of listening to the Chachamim. Right? That's meaning to say, when you say Asher Kirishon b'mitzvah yisav v'tzivanu, what I'm supposed to be thinking is that I am in fulfillment of listening to the sages of Chazal as we're given license by the Torah. Thereby, by my doing this action, I'm in fulfillment of the biblical commandment of Lois Asur. The Rambam would agree with that. He just would say that the counting of 613 is limited to those things which were explicitly commanded at Sinai. And there can't be any exceptions, because once you open up the exceptions, then all the exceptions should be included. And that's not the way it works. That's how the Rambam says it. The Rambam actually reiterates this in numerous other places around Halacha and in his introductions. That the Rambam essentially says that any rabbinic mitzvah essentially has the biblical stamp of approval. That's fascinating. That's a fascinating point. And this is a matter of great, great debate. The greatest entree into this debate is, in fact, his later colleague, the Ramban, Nachmanides. The Ramban has a pirush around the side of the Rambam, so just to get a sense of what that looks like for a moment, you know, in the actual sefer of the Rambam, so you'll have, the Rambam will have, in the center, there'll be the Rambam's Shoresh Rishon, and on the side over here is all the Ramban. But it's not, you just understand, the Ramban is much longer than the Rambam. So, pages and pages and pages of Ramban on the Rambam when he disagrees with the Rambam. So just to get a sense of the proportion over here, the Ramban is much longer than the Rambam when asking this question. So the Ramban asks a number of very basic questions. The Rambam asks some basic questions. Here are some of the questions that he asks. And I think that we're not going to do all of them, but one or two just very fascinating points. Listen to the way he describes this. He says, "V'hinei harav bana choma gevoha saviv ledirei chachamim." The Rav, notice by the way, the Ramban is very respectful of the Rambam when he's in his commentary. This is not the case when the Ramban speaks about other people, just so you should be aware. The Ramban does not mince words, and the Ramban does not add any flavor to the fact that when he disagrees with others who he feels are acting impudently. So as an example, when he comments and he defends the Rif's commentary on Shas, from the Baal Hamor of Zerachia Levi, he spares no words or niceties when attacking the Baal Hamor. Or similarly, on the Torah, when the Ramban usually quotes the Ibn Ezra, he usually quotes him to dismiss him, and usually in a very derisive way, because he feels that what he's saying is not always on mark. But when the Ramban quotes the Rambam, it is always with the utmost of respect. So just to point to understand the hierarchy, the way the Ramban looks at this. The Ramban built a large wall around the words of the sages, meaning every time I'm doing a rabbinic commandment, the Rambam is essentially given it the biblical stamp of approval, right? That's what we just saw. Avalhika peretz nofel niva b'choma niskava asher pisom lefesa yovoi shivra. He says, but ultimately he's building it on a faulty foundation, and the wall will fall, says the Ramban. This is not an edifice which will be lasting. Right, he says, Lefi, she is svara nifsedes, because the logic is unhealthy. Barov mekomos betamud. Ki hinei ledaatoi hamishtabesh b'mechubar kogoin shenismach ala ilon. So says the Ramban, let's say a person Does anything, let's say, muktzah on Shabbos, are the examples he's giving, or isurei derabban on Shabbos, amira la'akum, which means, I tell a non-Jew, please perform for me a melacha. That's an isurei derabbanon. The rabbi said we're not allowed to do that. Similarly, muktzah, let's say I move something, mechama letzel, from one state to another state or place, right? This is considered an isurei muktzah. So if the Rambam is going to tell me that all of those Isurei Dirabbanan, those rabbinic commandments, are really, really at heart the biblical commandment itself, he says, V'ra'ehu li'il kos malkos arboim. In that case, we know, the rule is that you get lashes, essentially, for any transgression of a biblical commandment. So for example, classic case, the case which is used actually to build up the rules of all others, is the Torah says, Lo sach so shor b'dishoy. You shouldn't muzzle a ox when it's plowing. Now, so that means to say that let's say a person were to go out into their field, they were to muzzle, you know, their ox, and people were to say, and witnesses would come along and say, you know, the Torah told you, you're not supposed to do this. And it's a lav sheyesh by ma'aseh, it's a commandment which is actually a active infringement as opposed to a passive infringement. If a person were to do that in the presence of witnesses with a warning, that person would have to get malchus arbaim, would have to get lashes because they explicitly transgressed an isur d'oraisa, a biblical commandment. But if a person were to do the same thing and to, let's say, transgress an isur d'rabbanon, let's say muktzah, a person should not get lashes. And nowhere have we ever seen malchus being applied to isur d'rabbanon, amir la'akum on Shabbos, muktzah on Shabbos, says the Ramban. So therefore, the Rambam's logic should not hold up. Surely the Rambam should say, well, that Isur Darabanan is in fact really an Isur Daraisa, because the Torah told us to listen to the Chachamim. So the Rambam says, but the Rambam got out on a technicality. Elo, Shepatru Arav, Rambam says, this is not, the reason why there's no Malkus there, Shom B'Sefer Shavtim, Ibnei Shinitan La'azoras Misas Beistin, Shekol Chachom Shemamri Al-Divreim Misas Abichenek. So the Rambam says, you know why it is that every midrabbanan you do not get malchus? Is because true, it is a mitzvah midoraisa to obey the chachamim who said you should not move muktzah on Shabbos. Yes, it really is biblical. But there's a few exceptions as to what you get malchus for. One is a lav hanita lazaras misas beistin. So let's say that God forbid that a person now transgressed something, that were they to be prosecuted in a case of mazid to the fullest of degree with witnesses, they would ultimately get misa. It would lead to a capital crime, a capital offense. In that case, then were there not to be witnesses, or it would not reach the level of a misas based in, then a person would not get malchus. It's one of the exceptions to the rule of getting malchus. So the Rambam says that's the reason why when I transgress an Isur Darabanan, I do not get any form of Malkus in the same way. On a technicality. And the Ramban says, but that doesn't make sense, because then, according to the opinion in the Gemara that says there is Malkus on a Lav Hanitan Lazaras Misas Beistin, then in that case, that person should say that you would get Malkus on Isur Darabanan, and that's not the case. He asks another question, the Ramban says, a very basic question, that is, if you think about this for a moment, we know that the Gemara treats, Halacha treats, an Isur Darabanan very differently to an Isur Daraisa. Can you think of an example? Where is there an example of where a Isur Darabanan is treated differently to an Isur Daraisa? We see this in numerous cases. One is, very simply, is what we call in the case of Safek, in a case of doubt. So, in a case of Safek Daraisa, I would go Lechumra. If it's a Safek Darabanan, I would go Lekula. Let's think of an example for a second. Let's say a person doesn't know whether they benched after eating their meal on Shabbos, and they're still full, but they don't remember if they benched or not, right? So what do we look? We look at the rule. The rule is there's a doubt. I have a doubt in my mind, and I have no way of resolving this doubt. What is it about? It's about whether I'd said Birkas HaMazon. Is Birkas HaMazon a mitzvah in the Torah or not? The answer is absolutely. V'achalto v'savato v'erachta. That's an explicit pasuk. So in that case, if I'm still full, And then in this case, I would say Sofik da'araisa lechumra. I would have to say the benching again. But let's say I were to forget whether I said, as an example, my borei nefashos. I had a cup of water. I had it in the right amount of time that warrants a bracha achrona. So in that case, if I don't know if I benched or not, in that case, I have a doubt. There's no way of resolving the doubt. I look back to what is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is midarabbanan, to say a bracha of borei nefashos. That's a rabbinic extension of the biblical birkas hamazon. In that case, I would say sofik derabbanan lekula. So that's one very basic example, and this happens all over the time, all over the place, that the Gemara says things like this. So if that's the case, then why should there be a difference, says the Ramban? Surely every rabbinic mitzvah, that saying borei nefashos, was an extension of the rabbis telling me, to the Torah telling me to listen to the rabbis. So I should really say, sofik d'oraisa le chumra. I should say, every time I have a sofik, every time I have a doubt as to whether I performed a rabbinic mitzvah, I should essentially say, well, it's actually a biblical mitzvah. Make sense? So that's the next question the Ramban has on the Rambam. There is a way to untie this knot for a moment. If you think about this very carefully and logically, there is a way to untie this knot. And that is, very simply, is that let's think about what's happening over here. Let's put ourselves in the seat of the Chachmei HaMishnah. Let's put ourselves in the seat of Chazal, who are making many ordinances, which, let's say, they're enacting the bracha of borei nefashos at the moment. So let's say you're on the council of Chazal, actually more specifically, Anshei Knesset Agdola. Anshei Knesset Agdola is saying, you know, when you have foods of this category of eating, you will say borei nefashos afterwards, right? So let's say you are on the council of Anshei Knesset Agdola. So you know that people are going to have to listen to you because the Torah tells you, lo yisosor. Right, the Torah has now given you the license as Anshei Knesset Agdola to, so to speak, create new mitzvahs, which will have the stamp of approval of the Torah because of Lo Yisosor Mikol Asher Yagidu Lecha, that you shouldn't veer from what they said, right? That being the case, right? That being the case, you now have in front of you a little bit of a problem. Because people now might not differentiate between what's the real McCoy and what is your extension or your creation as the rabbis, right? Meaning, the Torah tells you to say Birkas HaMazon, but the Torah does not say that every time you eat anything, there's a specific formula. So now when you're creating that formula, you want to be very careful that nobody's going to get mixed up in what you're saying and what the Torah is saying. In fact, the Torah actually explicitly is concerned about this. The Torah says, Baal Toysif. The rabbis are not allowed to add any commandment to the Torah in a way which would seem like it is the biblical commandment. So as an example, included in Baal Tosef is the rabbis can't say that you need to have, let's say, what's an example of tzitzis on a five-cornered garment, right? There should be five minim in the lulav. The rabbis can't do that. Nobody's allowed to, it's an issur d'oraisa, to add to what the Torah says. But that's if I'm adding it in a way where I want it to look like what the Torah said itself. Make sense? So let's say I'm adding on something. I'm saying, this is what the Torah said. But that wasn't what the Torah said. So now, Anshei Knesset HaGdola are walking a tightrope. They know that if they're making rabbinic enactments, that there is the level of license, there's the level of approbation that the Torah gives by Lo Yisosor Mikol Asher Yagidu Lecha Yamin U'Smol. But they also know that they don't want to create something which people get confused at being a mitzvah midoraisa, a biblical commandment. So what did they do? They structured it in a way that it acted differently. Meaning, when the rabbis created the mitzvah of saying a bracha achrona in this specific example, they created it, the architecture of that commandment was that it would not reflect the biblical commandment, even though it has the veracity of the biblical commandment. So what do? They created the rule of sofik derabbanan lekula in the first place. Even though, and they would apply it to their mitzvahs, even though those mitzvahs, technically speaking, had the biblical approbation. So now, when I'm finishing my meal, and I don't know if I benched or not, and as Birkas HaMazon, I apply the general rule of sofik derais lechumra. But when I now look at the borei nefashos, which I forgot, in that case, they structured their rabbinic commandment that in the case of a sofik, it would act differently to the d'oraisa, so I should never be confused that it is the d'oraisa, even though it has the d'oraisa approbation. That's what's going on over here. Brilliant. So what the Chazal are doing is they're straddling those two extremes. On the one hand, knowing that every rabbinic commandment is with biblical approbation. On the other hand, that it shouldn't look precisely the same. That's the way that that is generally answered according to the Ramban. The Rambam in response to the Ramban. Okay, so we've looked at two fascinating questions. The Rambam in general, just let's take a few steps backwards. The Rambam has said that technically speaking, every commandment that's given to us by the rabbis, by Anshei Knesset HaGdola, essentially is a mitzvah midoraisa, because it says lo sasur. You shouldn't sway or list or veer from what they said. Fair. If that's the case, the Baal Halachos Gedolos included all these extra mitzvahs in the Tarag mitzvahs. The Rambam says, no can do, because once you include some of them, you have to include all of them. And you, so that why should you include Purim, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah, and not include all the others? So clearly the count does not reflect those mitzvahs, but the Rambam agrees to the principle, which is based on the Gemara, that every mitzvah midrabbanan essentially has that biblical stamp of approval, right? That's what he says. The Ramban asked him in two questions. Question number one is, surely every mitzvah midrabbanan, therefore that you transgress, the negative ones, would have malchus with them. We saw that perhaps as a technicality because it could lead to misas based in, because if a person were to disagree with the sages, like a Zaka and Mamre, we didn't get into that point, a person were publicly to disagree, one of the sages would disagree with the Sanhedrin, they could be liable for death. So Lois Sosser is the warning for a Zaka and Mamre, so therefore it loses the ability or capacity to give Malkus. The second question the Ramban said is, surely every Sufik, every case where we have a Sufik by a rabbinic mitzvah, I should say lechumra, because it is midoraisa. And the Rambam would answer by saying, no, they structured in such a way that it operates differently. Okay, so now let's drive it a little bit further. Here's another question the Ramban raises, and again, these questions are really helpful, instrumental understanding how this operates. So the Ramban asks a very basic question. We see here's another case where the Gemara seems to treat a darabonon and a daraisa separately. So the case is the following. The Gemara is asking, is the chiyuv, is the responsibility of a woman saying Birkas HaMazon midaraisa midarabanon? The Gemara asks this question. When the Torah says V'achalto V'savato V'erata, is that speaking to women and men or men only? Is a part of the exception of Mitzvah Sase Shazman Grama? So the Gemara says, L'may Nafkimina, what difference does it make whether a woman is chayv midaraisa or midarabanon? And the Gemara responds, the difference would be, is whether a woman can be moitzi a man for Birkas HaMazon. If a woman is required biblically to say Birkas HaMazon, and there's two people in the room, a man and a woman, and they're both eaten, and the woman now says the Birkas HaMazon for the man essentially will be yotze, because somebody on the equal level of chiyuv, of responsibility, biblically, is saying the bracha for them. But if the woman's requirement is only an extension midrabbanan, the rabbis extended and included her in this responsibility, then her chiyuv would not be sufficient, her responsibility would not be sufficient to now encompass the man's chiyuv. That's what the Gemara says is the difference. But the Ramban says, but wait a second. Surely, even if the woman's obligation to say Birkas HaMazon is warranted from the Chachamim, but the Chachamim did so with license of the Torah, if that's the case, then every time the Gemara's logic no longer makes sense. The Torah's logic no longer holds. The Gemara's logic no longer holds. And what should really be in this instance is that a woman can always be moitzi a man in benching, because even though only rabbinically she was endowed with required to say benching, but nonetheless that was as an extension of Loi Sosor, of don't veer from the words of the Chachamim. That's another way the Ramban asks this question, where you see the difference of the rabbinic and the biblical mitzvahs play itself out. The answer to this is a very basic and fundamental point, and that is, any time we're performing a mitzvah midoraisa, there's two things at stake. There's the command, there's, so to speak, the action I'm doing. So let's say, as an example, Netilas Yadayim. Any person does Netilas Yadayim, that is a mitzvah midrabbanan, a rabbinic commandment. So I'm doing that mitzvah. Why? And the Rabbanan had many numerous reasons for that. But at heart, what mitzvah in the Torah am I fulfilling? I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of Lo Sasur. So I'm doing one mitzvah, but I'm fulfilling essentially another mitzvah, right? So when let's say as an example for the woman in Birkas Hamazon, let's say Chazal were the ones to say it was rabbinic, right? The Chazal say that a woman is required to say Birkas Hamazon. It wasn't midoraisa, it wasn't biblical. So it's true they're fulfilling the mitzvah of the rabbis, but at heart the actual kiyum midoraisa, the biblical kiyum, is actually the mitzvah of lo sasur. When a man is doing Birkas Hamazon, what kiyum hamitzvah is he getting? It's va'achalta v'savata v'erachta. The Torah tells us to bench. When a woman is benching, she is fulfilling the mitzvah of lo sasur mikol ashia gira l'choya min usmol, a different mitzvah. What the Gemara is essentially saying, says the Rambam, very simple, is that the woman who's responsible because of lo sasur cannot exempt a man who's responsible because of achalta v'savata. Two separate mitzvahs midoraisa are being fulfilled here, which is why the one cannot help the other. It doesn't diminish the importance of the mitzvah that the woman is fulfilling, but it comes from a different source. That's why the one doesn't help the other. Do you see the logic over here? So again, the Ramban's question was, the Gemara seems to differentiate between a mitzvah midoraisa and midorabbanan, that a person who's only obligated on a mitzvah midorabbanan cannot be moitzi a person who is chayev midoraisa. Surely we should say that every mitzvah midrabbanan is essentially a mitzvah midoraisa, and therefore anybody who's rabbinically endowed should be able to be moitzi anybody midoraisa. And the answer is no. Because even though the mitzvah of whatever it is, which is rabbinic, let's say Birkas Hamazon for a woman, is midrabbanan, that is a kiyum of the mitzvah midoraisa of lo sasur, not the mitzvah of achalta v'savata v'erachta. They're sourced in different mitzvahs, and therefore they cannot in fact help one another. The rabbinic one cannot be moitzi the daraisa. There was a third question and response. Finally, last question and response. Let's dig a little deeper here for a second. Just bear with me for a moment, because this just yields a fascinating result, logically speaking. And this is a technical shear, but this is worthwhile appreciating. The fourth question the Ramban asked. The Ramban asked many questions. We're only going to focus on four. Fourth question is actually based on the Rambam, himself. The Rambam paskins the following, based on the Gemara. The Gemara says, let's talk about the mitzvah of soita for a second. Soita is a case where there's a relationship, there's a husband and wife. The husband suspects infidelity on the side of the wife, warns her not to spend some time secluded with a particular individual. She does, with witnesses, a whole business, and he takes her to the base of Mikdash. And there's this whole episode here where you take the name of Hashem, it is diluted into water, she eats these ma'im ma'orarim, and it's, so to speak, this biblical test, which was operational in the times of the first Beis Hamikdash, as literally a miracle on demand, essentially, because this would either so to speak destroy her and the potential lover, or it would prove her innocence, and ultimately it would be successful. Now the Gemara actually darshans that this would only operate, this whole process would only operate if both of them were clean of sin. Both of them, meaning husband and wife. That means to say that let's say the husband was getting worried about what's happening with his wife, and she was in fact innocent, but he himself had demerits on his account, then the sota business would not work at all. Because, and it's based on a pasuk, a drasha of Naki, that he and she both need to be Naki. And the Rambam says that means to say that even if, listen to this, even if this individual, this man, the husband, had infidelity on his account, even derabbanon, rabbinic infidelity, as an example. So let's say he was engaged to a woman, and they engaged in a physical relationship. That is a isur derabbanon, right? He's engaged to the woman, but she is a ma'orasa. In that case, it's an isur derabbanon. In that case, the may soita would not work if later 10 years down the line there was this whole episode that ensued. So he has a strange thing. He has a very strange thing, according to the Rambam. Because what we just got to finish saying is that whenever a person fulfills a mitzvah midorabbanon, essentially what they're really fulfilling is the mitzvah of lo sasur min haTorah, right? If that's the case. So when this individual, this husband, when he was engaged, had a relationship with his wife-to-be, that's a mitzvah, that's an isur derabbanan. Without getting to that whole discussion, fascinating discussion in and of itself. That means to say that essentially he was in transgression of lo sasur, right? He wasn't listening to what the chachamim said should be under the circumstances, under the stage of erusin, right? That being the case, right? So if that's true, then how does that relate to Him being naki, him being clean, or so to speak, having a clean slate. That only relates to the fact that he listened to the rabbis, Lo Yisasser. How can the Rambam say that that relationship was an infringement on his fidelity? That's the question which is asked in the Rambam. Makes sense? Meaning to say, we keep on pushing the Rambam into a corner now. Right? We asked, first of all, surely there should be Malkus. We explain why there's no Malkus on every Issa Drabbanan. Then we said, well, you know, maybe there's no Malkus, but what about Sofik Drabbanan Lekula? Why is it going Lekula if it's really a Mitzvah Doraisa? We said, no, the Drabbanan is structured in such a way. We said, but wait a second, why is that a Mitzvah, a person who's Chayev Midrabbanan cannot be Moitzi, a person Midoraisa? And we said that, you know, the reason is that really when a person's doing Mitzvah Drabbanan, they're fulfilling the Mitzvah Lo Yisasser, not the Mitzvah that was the Mitzvah Midoraisa was actually the Birkas Hamazon in the example we used. But now if we push the logic further, now we arrive at an impasse. And that is the Rambam himself says that when a person has a rabbinic demerit on their account, that counts as a problem Midoraisa, not to be Naki, but that wasn't the problem. That's an Issur Drabbanan which relates to Lo Yisasser, not specifically to the idea of this individual being Naki, which is a Daraisa requirement for the relationship with Saita. That's the question. Now, we just keep pushing the logic, and here it yields a very, very fascinating outcome. This outcome is the topic of much, 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 much literature. There are svarim written on this topic, as can be seen, and we're really just dipping into beneath the surface right now. This essay of the Ramban is extensively long. There's also a sefer which was written on this, a very famous sefer, the first section of which deals with this topic, and that is a sefer written by Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman called Kuntras Divrei Soferim. And the first section deals with this. And he makes a fascinating, fascinating assertion. Really a remarkable insight into understanding the mechanics of mitzvahs. And he says, let's actually take a quick look if we can. Here we go. This is what he says. And this is just, and it actually relates to yesterday's parasha. It's a very, very, very beautiful insight. He says the following. In paragraph 22, in the first section of Kunjus Dere Sovim, he says, Omnam, Lefi Anir Le'el, according to what we just seen, Asi Shapir, to call Mashet Tzivu Chachamum Oni Yodim, Shekeinu Gam Rotzon Hashem, V'davar Zeh La'asos Ritzoni Yisporach, Kol Boye Oilam, Mitzuvim V'oimdim Mitchilas Briyosim Al Zeh, V'dechol Anitz Nimsoim Nivru La'asos Ritzoni Koinam. So he says that ultimately, when a person does the will of the Chachamim, the bidding of the Chachamim, essentially what the Chachamim were doing, were they approximating the divine Ratzon, the divine will in this particular case. I'll try to come back to the Katon in a moment. A minor whose responsibility to do the mitzvah is midirei chinuch, but he is considered mid-rabbon, actually fulfilling the mitzvah that he's doing, rather than the mitzvah chinuch. That's the same kind of dichotomy that we just saw a moment ago. But he says the following. The Yirmiyahu says a pasuk, which actually gives rise to this principle. The pasuk is the following. Uvanu es ba masabal, nisroif es b'neihim ba'esh. So the Bnei Israel did all these terrible things, says Yirmiyahu. One of the things they did is they built these altars to the Baal God, and they burnt their children on these altars, as unfortunately was the practice we see in Sefer Melachim. Asher lo tzivisi v'lo dibarti v'lo olsa alibi. The pasuk says, I never commanded them to do this, I never spoke about this, and I never even imagined them to do this. The Gemara actually darshens, just as a side point, that three particular instances where this actually occurred in Tanakh, right? The Akedah, by the king of Moab, and where people sacrifice their children. By Yiftach, he says, Upirusha b'targum, what does it mean, these three cases? Delei pakiris b'araisa, v'lei shalachis b'yad avodai nevi'ai, v'lei rava kodomai, v'lo rava kodomai. He says, the targum, on that pasuk says there's three categories of things here. Things which I never commanded them explicitly in the Torah. I didn't send in the hands of my prophets, and I never wanted in my heart, so to speak. He says, Hani b'kosov azeh. He says, Mufurash, Ki yesh shloisha chelkei Torah. There's three different parts of Torah, says Rebbe Elchanan. Hanikra tzivui, the part which is a commandment, that's a mitzvah. Hanikra dibur, that which is said or described, and which the Nevi'im will therefore talk about. And she'en olav lo tzivu lo dibur el ha-rotzon Hashem ilvad ve'em kol ha-mitzvos d'rabbanan. And then there's the part of the Torah which Hashem wants, but He never explicates. He never says, I want you to do this. But what do the rabbis do? The rabbis intuited as to what was essential to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what was more important, what was less important, and they created mitzvos midrabbanan around what they understood to be the Ratzon Hashem. So, this just to appreciate this, what his suggestion is that the Torah gave us 613 commandments, where Hashem said explicitly, prescriptively, here's what I want you to do. And there are other things which He never explicitly, so to speak, commanded us to do, but were important, dibarti, I spoke about. So as an example, let's take Yeshayahu Anavi. He talks about what Shabbos should look like. Right? So he describes what Shabbos should look like. And we learn from here a whole lot of halachas that ultimately, that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is important, this is what Hashem wanted, and He spoke it out through His prophets. And then there's a third category of things. Third category of things are things that Hashem never explicitly prescribed or described. It wasn't that we're learning it from the way that Avraham Avinu got up early in the morning, and it wasn't because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do Bris Milah. But He talks about it a lot. These concepts seemed important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Rabbanan created mitzvahs around these concepts. Right, so Anshek and Zagdola formulate Tefillah because they know that there is a biblical commandment of Tefillah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to want this connection with human beings, so they created the structure which helps give material access to what Hashem really wanted. And therefore he says, and that's by the way how he explains Parashas Balak, which you just read, Lufi pshuto haya mikra ois nira shezeh haya avono shel Bilam ha-rasha, dilichora acharei she'omar im yiten li bolak molo kesev ha-zohav lo yuchal ha-havor es pi Hashem. You know, he says, you know, I can't transgress the mouth of Hashem, the commandment of Hashem. My rishasai, what was his commandment? Surely he said, I can't disobey God. Mess. The truth is, Afshiyada Bilam Hetev Ki Halichos LeKalel Es Yisrael Hu Neged Ratzon Hashem LeChoshat Shalzeh Kolzman Shelo Hayalai Tziva Mufurash Shelo Leilech. You know, like Hashem never said, "Don't go." Hashem clearly didn't want him to go. The Ratzon Hashem was not to go, but Hashem never actually said explicitly, "Don't go." So therefore, he says the failing of Bilam was knowing what God wanted. And they're finding a loophole in what he didn't quite say so explicitly to find the way to get around. And I'm sure we've all been in those situations, those Bilam moments beforehand. And that's ultimately the struggle that he had, and he failed. So Bilam was very from, he says, I'm never going to disagree with what Hashem says. So that's his P, Daika. What it means is specifically what he says. Aval Ratzon Hashem, lo yachashu be'enav la'asoysa v'zeru shasa. But if Hashem wanted something and He didn't explicitly say it, I don't know. On the law books, it doesn't look precisely that this issue that I'm dealing with over here, no matter how many shades of gray it is, doesn't look explicitly like it's illegal. So therefore, it should be all right. So that is the failing of Bilam over here. So you see from this Rebbe Elchanan, which is a very fascinating idea, and he goes on to explain and apply this. But according to this, let's go back to the question that we're dealing with. In the case, when it comes to the mitzvah midrabbanon, a person who's obligated to a mitzvah midrabbanon, let's say birkas hamazon for a woman as an example, as opposed to a man who's chayiv midda or raisa, and the Gemara says, well, if a woman is obligated rabbinically, she cannot help a man fulfill his obligation if he were to be silent while she's at the benching for him in this construct for a moment. So, well, and we ask, but wait a second, why is it that rabbinically it should be different? And the answer was, well, because she is fulfilling the mitzvah of Lo Sasur, of don't veer from the commandments of the rabbis. Technically speaking, yes, she's fulfilling that command of Lo Sasur, but how did the rabbis construct it in the first place? They constructed it because they knew that there was something which Hashem really wanted, and Hashem expressed that it was important to Him, but He didn't prescribe or describe it. So therefore, they took the license that the Torah gave them to create this, which essentially means they're extending the Ratzon Hashem, that third category that Rabbi Elchanan was talking about. Similarly, in the case over here of the person who committed infidelity, let's say a person had a relationship with his Ma'orasa in this case, that would still render him Lo'naki. Yes, he was transgressing the mitzvah midrabbanon of lo'sasur by engaging in that relationship. But the reason why the rabbis made that commandment was because they understood that this is what Hashem wanted in this circumstance as an extension of the biblical commandment itself, which therefore makes it germane to that original category in the first place. That's the way that's understood over here. Just a fascinating point. Now, just to be honest right now, what we've done is we've looked at the first charge. We need to get to number two, which will help us understand this a little even better. What the Rambam understands is that rabbinic commandments are not included in the count. But at the same time, every rabbinic commandment does have the biblical endorsement, which is what led to this very fascinating discussion as to how to differentiate between a rabbinic and a biblical commandment, essentially. And what comes out is the fascinating, so to speak, dichotomy or tension that anytime we are doing a rabbinic commandment, we're essentially fulfilling the mitzvah of lo'sasur, but the lo'sasur was actually their understanding of what Hashem wanted from us, even though the Torah was mute about it. And therefore, by doing it, we are fulfilling, so to speak, an extension of what the Torah wanted with the rabbinic license of the Torah itself. That's what comes down to this complex structure of any mitzvah midrabbanon, or the default mitzvah midrabbanon, unless structured differently. What we have yet in front of us to unpack, and this is where it gets more complicated, is that there's not all rabbinic commandments are the same. So the examples that we looked at today, Chanukah, Purim, Me'ar Brachos B'chol Yom, Hallel, right? All these examples are only one subcategory of the drabbanons. They are not similar, as an example, to other mitzvahs midrabbanon. Let's say burying the dead as an example, honoring one's elder brother, which is a mitzvah midrabbanon. There's a whole other category which are actually different. What about the idea of the rabbis teaching us that the esrog is what the Torah means when it was a pre-Eitz Hadar? That seems to be the Gemara is telling us. That's Chazal telling us what to use. That's also a different category of mitzvah midrabbanon. So for the truth of the subject, we really need to expand and understand what the actual different categories of the drabbanon are, and that will lead us to Shoresh Sheni, the second foundation in the Rambam, in understanding that whenever we look at a particular mitzvah, we need to understand which type of rabbinic mitzvah it is and how it operates differently to the other ones. It's very enlightening because anytime we go through the day now, we can understand why we're doing what we're doing in a much more purposeful and significant way. So I think that this is actually a good stopping point because I do not want to charge into Shoresh Sheni when there's so much more